This is the Schnitt Show.
All right, how you doing? Welcome to Final Hour here on the Wednesday edition of the Schnitt Show. I'm Casey O'Day in for Todd all this week. And look at that, we're more than halfway through. Does math and stuff. We're gonna try to jam a whole bunch here into this final hour. Let me just get right into this. So up in New York City, unvaccinated teachers must waive the right to sue if they want to be able to keep their health benefits. So in addition to being put on unpaid leave, New York City teachers who've declined to get the vaccine will not be allowed to keep their health benefits for another year unless they give up their right to sue the city over its vaccine mandate. All this is just so messy. I continue to be baffled by people who are not seeing the scope of how problematic this is. This condition, the result of an arbitration invoked by the city's largest teachers union, the United Federation of Teachers. The union touted the arbitration verdict as a victory, forcing the city to acknowledge medical and religious exemptions to the vaccine. You know, locally, I'm in contact with some folks within one of the school districts where I broadcast up in North Carolina, and we're trying to actually wrap our head around the exemption numbers that we're seeing for employees where they are mandated. And it is very interesting to read the form letters that people who are getting rejected are giving back. Because my theory, or the thing that I am wondering, we'll just say that, and trying to track more information down on, is there an edict going into this? Like, you just deny these. Just deny them all, and if they come back under the appeal process, then maybe. Because one of the people I was talking to had literally multiple doctor's notes over a very specific but rare condition and was denied this. Willing to do testing, whatever, but said, hey, here's why I can't. Here's my general physician, and here is a specialist, literally attesting to this, and they were denied. And so I don't know how that's playing out everywhere, but I think it's going to be interesting when we start learning some of those numbers. It also, under the agreement, it allowed teachers to take a year of unpaid leave with continued health coverage, or voluntarily resign with unused sick days paid out and a year of continued health insurance. So they basically, the school district didn't like the ruling, so they decided they were going to find other ways to screw with folks. So that's nice. Absolutely. All these folks who were heroes, right? Not a hero anymore. But according to the press release, the health benefits would only continue beyond November 30th for those who sign waivers preventing them from suing the city for getting fired. It did include a link to the arbitration verdict. Well, it's not that important. So anyway, it just shows you. It shows you how deep and committed some organizations, and in this case, school districts or and companies will be like this, are willing to go. The bully pulpit that they have, and so they can come out and make statements like, well, look, vaccine mandates work. Yeah. Yeah, making it so people might not be able to support their families, it works. I will agree with you 100%. Well done. You figured out a loophole. Let's give you an update, too, on a story we talked about earlier this week. That is the Marine officer who was criticizing leadership following the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller Jr. took to Facebook in August after 13 service members were killed, demanding accountability from those in leadership. That led to an investigation during which Scheller was told not to post opinionated stuff on social media, and he didn't abide by that. He posted several other things, including a post that essentially told his CO, bring over the MPs at 9 a.m., I'll be waiting for you. And his parents on Fox News, and yesterday or earlier this week, we found out the litany of charges against him. Well, it is expected, apparently, that Schuller will plead guilty to several of the charges against him for his comments. He has spent most of the time, he spent about a week in confinement at Camp Lejeune, which is up in North Carolina here. And one of his attorneys, a guy by the name of Tim Palator, tells The Hill that Scheller will be pleading guilty in the case. The case began with a call for accountability, and Scheller will demonstrate to senior leadership how to accept accountability for his own actions. Palator said the team is working on an arrangement with the hope of getting Scheller an honorable discharge or a discharge with honorable conditions. And I admit I don't know all the different ways that your discharge can deviate. I know there's unhonorable, less than honorable, honorable, but apparently you can wrap this thing up several different ways. He also added that Scheller should only get a letter of reprimand and no additional punishment following the, quote, totally excessive and unnecessary week in the brig. The potential agreement first reported by the Washington Post and the possibility of a plea deal reported by Coffee or Die magazine. The big question that remains is whether all the important messages that he brought out will be adopted, because while the Marine Corps leadership could sit there and say he shouldn't have taken his comments online, nobody is saying that he said anything that was untrue. That statement is true. I will say that. You're absolutely right. There wasn't a lot of people taking responsibility in those congressional hearings. The reason people are upset on social media right now is not because the Marines on the battlefield let somebody down. This is what Scheller says. People are upset because their senior leaders let them down, and none of them are raising their hands and accepting accountability or saying, we messed this up. And again, we've talked about this, why you don't do that, but I think that's interesting. So he says, I'm going to take responsibility. This is what you guys should be doing. I did this thing. I'm responsible for that. Maybe y'all should learn from that. Which it's a pretty good response, I'll be honest with you. All right, let's see, 800-801-8999. All right, one of these stories. So, not everyone's in lockdown down in Australia. And when you get over to the western side of Australia, apparently people are still out doing what they're doing, but with restrictions. Another thing you have to know about Australia is they have a very, very, very toothy shark tracking program. We have it here too, and I have the shark tracking app because I'll go down to the coast, right? And then it'll end up in the news. It'll be like a giant great white just swam by the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And so if you live near the ocean, this is not unusual. In Australia, though, they mark any great white, any decent-sized great white they can get their paws on. There are literally hundreds and hundreds in any given area. And as they have an app, and it's a proximity app. So if you're down at the beach, and there is one of these sharks, which has a monitoring device on it, is rolling into your vicinity, it could sound an alarm, flash on your phone, all of that. All right, I just set that up for this reason. So a fisherman, a Western Australian commercial fisherman, is accused of removing a shark monitoring device from a great white shark that he caught and released. So he inadvertently catches this shark, gets it up to the boat. Obviously, he's not going to keep it. But he's like, hey, you know what? I'm going to take that, though. Now, why did he take it? Well, listen to what he did with it. According to The Guardian, the 48-year-old fisherman would then use it to trigger false alarms in areas where he wanted to fish but were inundated with swimmers and boaters and jet skiers and the like. And it worked, right? Because people were like, shark, got to get out of the water. I think it was probably easy to figure out, though, because what do you do when you're not using it? Do you think officials are like, why is that shark hanging over by the dock? What's going on, man? Or do you wrap it in tinfoil or something? I don't know. But yeah, he was busting out the shark tracker when he wanted to get into areas so he could clear the water around it. That is super MacGyver, dude. The tracker eventually figured it out and recovered it actually about a week ago. And he's in actually quite a bit of trouble. I mean, he's charged with stuff that could send him to jail. The argument being that he endangered the public by removing the tracker. The tracker, by the way, came from one of the nearly 115 sharks that have been tagged in this just that program at that little area, that little slice, and it's not even the busy one because, again, they're over on the Perth side, not the Sydney side. And so since there was one shark swimming around, probably irritated because he stole his earring, and I don't know where they hook it. I suppose they probably hook it in the dorsal fin or something. But, yeah, he was endangering the public. He will face a court coming up in November to answer for his crimes. I just want to know if the fishing was really good. Like, did that work? Or are you just annoyed by screaming kids or something? Is he just grumpy or what? But that's pretty clever, man. Probably shouldn't have done it, but made for a pretty good story. All right, is everyone ready for our annual Halloween decoration freakout? Oh, these are fun, aren't they? Right. Some sort of social messaging, some sort of political statement. Or, in the case of this one story I want to tell you about, some sort of actual triple homicide. I'll give you that and much more coming up in just a few here on Schnitt.
This is the Schnitt Show.
Show.
All right, welcome back. It is the Schnitt Show. Our phone number 800-801-8999. And of course, you know, ye old website at schnittshow.com. You can find a link to, stuff we're talking about. This is a little deviation from what is the normal freak out over Halloween displays, although I'm sure those will be forthcoming. Fear not. Somebody will do something really racist or really stupid or really political or, in this case, really, quote, too soon. This is in Michigan, Kent County. John Seisling, several decades ago, beat his mother and teen sister with a baseball bat, stabbed them with a kitchen knife before hunting down and stabbing his six-year-old sister. The triple murder taking place in a home on, quote, on Walker Avenue. So I'm sure nobody knows where that is, but that's not the point of this story. Well, over the weekend, the Halloween decorations went up. The home, which is actually owned by the daughter of the homeowner at the time of the murders, or the granddaughter, I guess it would be, of the homeowner. It's a home that's been in the family for multiple generations. They were actually renting the home to the family when the murders took place, when the son murdered the three other people. Her name is Amanda, has placed for her Halloween decorations this year three gravestones surrounded by police tape, an evidence marker by a baseball bat on the porch, and a front door with a silhouette on the glass that says, "Help Us," written in dripping red paint. Handprints on the front window look like they're made with blood. Amanda, who did not want to use her last name in this report, says she's unapologetic. She grew up in the house. It has been in her family for decades. It's a Halloween decoration. And she actually said that she remembers the bloodbath that the family was forced to clean up after investigators finished their work. And there is still blood inside places of the home should you tear out floorboards and open walls. Everyone in the area, it's a small area, knows what happened there. Just the mention of the address actually raises eyebrows. Drivers slow down, stare and point, and people will literally yell things as they pass. Around the house and around the town, it's known as the Walker legend, but it's also where she says she raised her children. She said, in a way, also putting up the decorations was her way of saying, look, we're well aware, stop screaming at us when you're driving past my house. Okay, I have a question, because here's the deal. I feel like, depending on where you are, I don't know if it's the same everywhere. Like, there's a murder house. And whatever town you grew up in, you probably knew where there was a murder house, right? We knew where there was a murder house, where there was an explosion in the town of Wyoming where I grew up. But somebody lived in that house. And so, you know, there's some people who be like, I could never live in one of those houses. Well, but some people do. Some people live in a murder house. I lived in an apartment one time that was on the upper. This is one of the places when I first moved to Minnesota, because I broadcast there for 8 years before I moved to North Carolina over a decade ago. And one of the first apartments I had was downtown, and it was on the second floor of just, it was a two-story building. It was a dentist office below and the upstairs, and it was a block and a half from the Mississippi River. It's a great location. Walk everywhere. You had the Mississippi River right there. You had a view from up that second story. And I remember I was in a bookstore, and there was a book called Ghost Stories of Minnesota. And I kind of liked that kind of stuff. It was in the bargain bin, and I'm flipping through it. And I look at the chapter heading because I want to see how many stories are in there. And literally, it had 72 East 2nd Street. And I'm like, and then the name of the town. And I'm like, whoa, what? That's my address, I think. And sure enough, I open it up, and they had a ghost story. And the reason was, is the building was a very old building. And at the time, it was also, it was utilized as a bar and a brothel way back in the day. And there was a murder. There was a murder that took place of one of the prostitutes there. Now, do I fully know the veracity of it? All right, you know, the story, the little ghost story looked decently researched. They had some documents, too, and pictures in the book. And I remember I bought it. I'm like, I have to own this book. And I thought it was so fascinating that I, when I got home, I put a bookmark in it on that story, and I left it on my coffee table with, you know, whatever other stuff I had on there. And I occasionally, I would show it to somebody. And they get all weird. But my question is, if you live in a murder house, and I guess you didn't do the murder, nobody would have a problem if the Amityville house was all decked out, or the, you know, the chick with the hatchet killing her parents. So apparently it's just an issue of not enough time has passed. I don't know. But I'm, if that's what you want to do and it's your house, then people can pound sand. I don't care. Whatever. All right, we got another half hour to go here on Schnitt, so hang on. We'll be back.
This is the Schnitt Show. Schnitt list every day at schnittshow.com.
All right, we touched on this well, a little bit yesterday, the John Gruden story. Obviously, you're probably aware that John Gruden has resigned as the head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders. Still, you know, having to adapt to that. This after a series of emails that he had sent back and forth. To the general manager, Bruce Allen, the Washington football team. Technically, they were investigating the emails of the Washington football team. It wasn't even about John Gruden. But there were so many, like 350,000. And that little treasure trove yielded several from Gruden as he was working as an analyst, not a coach at the time. But there was enough in there that they called for his resignation. He resigned. He apologized, and he's out. Okay. The question is, what else is in there? And how did Gruden, who I guess was, you know, wasn't even really, the focus was not Gruden, it was the Washington football team. And I'll tell you why, and maybe you don't understand fully some of the stuff that they found in there, but ultimately, what was it about Gruden? And, you know, people can theorize that maybe one of the things that bothered people about Gruden is he didn't necessarily walk the political lines that some people wanted. One of the emails was him being just horrible to Joe Biden when he was vice president at the time. Roger Goodell, obviously, did not like Roger Goodell, but, you know, who does? And so a lot of theories have emerged. I find this one very interesting, though. So, this is on, I want to give credit where credit is due. Pro Football Talk founder Mike Florio was on the Dan Abrams show yesterday. And he shared his belief as to where the emails may have leaked from. Because this was a leak. This was not publicly disclosed stuff. This was absolutely leaked. And he thinks the NFL wanted it out there. quote, this is the kind of thing that makes reporters antsy and angry, and it's never stopped me in 20 years of doing it, so I'm going to go ahead and do it, said Florio. The NFL, I believe, wanted this out there. The NFL wanted this to be known, so they handpicked Andrew Beaton, that's the reporter from the Wall Street Journal who wrote the article, for the first email that was dropped on Friday. It's my thought that they deliberately leaked these, the league deliberately leaked these, and when John Gruden didn't resign and wasn't fired over the weekend, they then leaked more, said Florio. And I think they were going to keep leaking it until the owner of the league fired Gruden or Gruden walked away, which he did. And I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong number on the number of emails. That number that I had yesterday of 350,000 is actually 650,000. 650,000 emails that are part of this investigation into the alleged toxic workplace environment of the Washington football team, the Washington Redskins. And it's Gruden who takes it in the chin. That's a pretty damning thing, man. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of people in the NFL and in sports media right now who are like, oh, man, what all did I send emails? Because in some cases, this was about emails that people sent to other people that were then forwarded to staff and management of the Washington Redskins. And so now they've ended up on the radar. So sometimes you didn't even have to email somebody over there. Something you emailed somebody else that's now part of a forward. Well, now you're in there. And I guess you want to make sure everyone's your friend. And I don't think John Gruden's going to be the end of this. Now, what are they looking for over there? Oh, before I get into that too, let me just hit this. So the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have announced that former Las Vegas Raiders head coach, why would they write it like that? How about former Tampa Bay head coach and current or previous Las Vegas Raiders head coach? Anyway, John Gruden will be removed from their ring of honor inside the Tampa Bay Stadium. The Buccaneers have this is their statement. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers have advocated for purposeful change in the areas of race relations, gender equality, diversity, and inclusion for many years. While we acknowledge John Gruden's contribution on the field, his actions go against our core values as an organization. All right, I have a question. Because you know what I'm getting vibes of? I'm getting statue vibes now. What do I mean by that? I'm getting statue vibes in the sense that, remember when they were first like, no, what we got to do is we got to take down this statue of, and then insert a Civil War general. And then people are like, anything else? And they're like, no, just this. This is fine. And then slippery slope guys such as myself were like, I don't think that's just fine. I don't think it's going to stop there. It's like we talked about earlier. Once you've achieved your goal, you can either find something else to do or you can find another goal. And that goal expanded. And President Trump at the time said, "Whoa, are we going to get into the Founding Fathers? What are you talking about?" And before you know it, they were ripping statues down. But de Blasio just had a Thomas Jefferson statue removed from City Hall there in New York City. That literally, it was just a story that broke today. And they were tearing that down. They got to get Columbus, George Washington, can't have him. Abe Lincoln was demonized. In San Francisco, they renamed, and then they had to undo it because it was just too much crazy. They renamed a Martin Luther King Jr. school. What? So all of these predictive slippery slope things went forward. So by pointing that out, allow me. Because a lot of times the arguments were based on the era, right? The Founding Fathers lived in an era of slavery, therefore there's no way they could be good. How far are you going to go on the sports side? You can say, well, you know, John Gruden, so he was working. You know, he's still working. And he said this stuff, it wasn't that long ago, and he's still working in the business, and you can't have that. You can't have people still working, so... just him, but it's fine. What if somebody in this whole chain of emails comes out and maybe they're not working in the NFL anymore, but in some other capacity, but they're still alive? Because I feel like then they would go, well, look, this person's still alive, obviously. And so my question becomes, how deep do you go? It is no secret the Ty Cobbs of the world. It is no secret in that era of baseball when integration was happening with Jackie Robinson and other black players how they were treated and how publicly other ball players would speak about how they were not a fan of this and would use that derogatory language. Some of these ball players find themselves enshrined in Cooperstown. You see where I'm going with this? How deep do you go? How far back do you go? What constitutes it? Because we have shown an absolute inability in this society to even attempt to separate the social issues from the actual sports issues. Sometimes they intertwine. Look, some guy going on a diatribe about how he doesn't want, you know, N-words during integration of baseball, and there's several examples of that, but willing to go out and say that in front of a mic, that's where they intertwine. Maybe that guy shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame anymore is the argument you're going to hear. Or are we going to do the thing that we have the inability to do, which is to look at the era and maybe say, you know what, going down this road isn't necessarily a positive thing, if only because things have changed. That's the slippery slope. That's the statue vibes that I get off of this story. Now, as you look to what are some of the things actually within the purview of the Washington Redskins at the time, the cheerleader stuff, let's see, here we go. Former Washington cheerleaders are calling on the NFL to release the full results of its investigation into the workplace culture following allegations that inappropriate photos of squad members were distributed by coaches. So here is what is said to have been happening. So the cheerleaders would go and they do these big calendar shoots. And when they're doing the calendar shoots, these girls are they're basically out there and they're changing clothes right out in the open. So there is there's lots of nudity, lots of nipples and pubic regions, as it's stated in here. And the reason I point that out is because according to one of the emails, a 10-minute video was produced and was produced at the behest of Washington football team staff members where they were instructed to take behind-the-scenes content at the swimsuit photo shoot and package it and create a video, quote, featuring only the good bits, reportedly bare nipples and pubic areas while cheerleaders were changing clothes or moving around. According to the outlet, the video was shared with team owner Dan Snyder. He has denied that allegation, but that's what investigators believe. So this is what they're looking for right there, and somehow we got ourselves over to John Gruden. Makes you wonder about how it got out there, who made it get out there, and what the motivation may have been. Maybe even it's just to distract from Dan Snyder. Let's face it, ownership's got a lot more swing than even coaches. But they're good questions. And by the way, if I was one of these cheerleaders, I'd be absolutely incensed. And I understand people are making the argument, well, you know, they're essentially nude. And they're not. They're in a photo shoot environment, and they sure as hell didn't consent to a 10-minute video of them naked, then to be shared with the people that they work with. Give me a break. All right, 800-801-8999. Don't Google that. I don't think it's out there. Bunch of pervs. We'll wrap it up with a few other stories in the final segment of the Schnitt Show, which commences here in just a few minutes.
This is Schnitt. The Schnitt List is on.
SchnittShow.com.
All right, here we go. Final segment, and let's try to fit all three of these things in here if we can. First, just one more addition. I just saw this. They tweeted it about 45 minutes ago. EA Madden NFL Twitter account issued the following statement. Quote, EA Sports is committed to taking action and maintaining a culture of inclusion and equity and bilking you for every dollar you have, EA. Thank you. They didn't write that. Due to the circumstances of John Gruden's resignation, we are taking steps to remove him from Madden NFL 22, which that came out, what, in August? I think that's normally when they replay. I haven't updated mine, so I don't really play that many games, but I do have this one. We will replace him with a generic likeness via a title update in the coming weeks. So they're going to do a push update on that. And John Gruden is now getting canceled from the Madden game. So tonight, let me hit this. Brian Landry is still America's most wanted man. And that's a label that John Walsh, right? Yeah, America's most wanted John Walsh, knows all too well. In a new special called Gabby Petito, ID Special Report, which airs tonight, the famed America's Most Wanted host weighs in on the case of Petito, age 22, who was found dead after traveling across the country with her 23-year-old boyfriend. And he's now the subject of a manhunt and in weird theories. Like, he's living under the vegetable garden, all sorts of craziness. I saw Fox News was chasing his dad around a convenience store at like 4 a.m. this morning when he was buying milk. Everything's nuts. On Tuesday, the Wyoming coroner revealed Petito's cause of death, manual strangulation. Got it. All right, let me get to the meat of why I'm doing this. Walsh speculates that Landry is currently being aided and abetted by his parents. Quote, I absolutely believe that his family is helping him stay on the run. Walsh, who also hosts IDs in Pursuit with John Walsh, so this is the ID channel, additionally reveals that his own show's hotline has been flooded with tips relating to possible Brian Landry sightings. There have been some strange ones. We had the one in North Carolina where he's on the Appalachian Trail. There was some nut job flight attendant chasing a dude around a parking lot in Canada because he kind of, sort of, but really didn't look like Brian Landry. And she's like, he's being very off-putting. Yeah, because you're chasing him through the parking lot of a hotel in the middle of the night. He probably thinks you're nuts. Walsh says, naturally, not all the tips are reliable. We've got people from all over the world calling saying that Martians got him and took him to another planet. And he's inside hiding in an alligator in a Louisiana swamp. What is he, Joe Dirt? Walsh says in the special, but he's also gotten, quote, solid tips of sightings in the Bahamas, which Landry could have accessed from Florida via ferry, Walsh explains, or in Mexico. We'd have over 1,000 solid tips in the In Pursuit hotline. Most of them are about my theory of his father driving him to the Mexican border and letting him go through. It's a great time to be headed south because there are thousands of refugees. I mean, he could literally walk across the border naked with his hair on fire and nobody would notice him. I think that's maybe where he's hiding and somebody may be helping him. So, I don't know, take it for what it's worth. I guess Dog the Bounty Hunter says he's done looking for him or something and just encouraged him to turn himself in, so whatever, that's a thing. So, all right, and then I want to end with this. Do I got enough time? Absolutely. Let's do this. Perfect. A man has been arrested for killing his wife. Okay, sad story, obviously. Story we've heard before. The details, though, are a little different. According to authorities, they say he killed his wife by throwing a cobra at her while she was in bed. Yeah. The cobra like the snake. Absolutely. And actually, they also theorize it wasn't his first attempt because the reason she was in bed is because she had been bitten by what is known as a Russell's viper about 3 weeks earlier and was recovering from the first snake bite. Now authorities speculate that he had tried to kill her with the viper when she was out in the yard and it didn't work. And now he was able to do it by throwing a cobra into the bed. Police say the investigation points to Suraj, is his first name, being behind both attempts. They also arrested the man who helped him procure the snakes. Well, I know you know what we need here. We need snake control regulation. We need probably a snake purchase waiting period. This guy right here who sold him the snakes, that's obviously one of those snake show loopholes. Probably want to get a snake purchase waiting period. You probably need to regulate the length of snakes. Nobody needs a snake that long. I mean, come on, what are we even doing here? Probably number of snakes that you own. We need a snake red flag law, so if somebody feels that you're a danger to yourself or others, then the authorities can come kick in your door and take your snakes. probably want to post some snake-free zone signage or simply no snaking zones, like they did in the city of Charlotte for some inexplicable reason. That was a fun story up in my neck of the woods. Yeah, they're gonna have to be pretty quick. Get some regulations there on the. Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say? Oh, it's illegal to murder your spouse. Oh, it's already illegal, huh? That is weird. It's almost as if all the snake regulation I just talked about would be largely unnecessary. But that's another story for another day, and that's today's Schnitt Show. But don't worry, I'll be back tomorrow.
The Schnitt Show.